I don't know how to play, and I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive sparked zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my.
Nigger alarm. Whack, nigger alarm.
Nigger, yep.
Well,
yes, we're here. Emergency nigger. Emergency in case nigger. Of emergency, break nigger glass.
Yeah, we don't. I don't know. I don't necessarily care that much in general about being news cucked, although I will say it's been hard to schedule an episode, and then I was like, you know, kind of kicking stuff back and forth. And then all of a sudden, there's just shit tons of news in the span of really less, I mean, probably more like closer to 16 than 24 hours.
Yeah. And we're inevitably going to be news cucked because,
right,
like,
things are moving
fast. What
the
fuck is going to come out of this?
Absolutely. Still, absolutely. Yeah.
But
yeah, there's a shit ton of, I think, I don't know how much you want to get into, like, the immediate stuff and how much is the, I think I have to say, at least in terms of the background, you know, we're recording this on the day before Purim 2024, which I actually, I'm just going to go out and on a limb and say that I do think these things are related, but we'll get there. Yeah. And
free my nigger red heifer. Don't kill him. Free my nigger red heifer.
Yeah. Right. So we'll get to that in a second. But yeah. So basically, things are going very, very badly for the Jews. I mean, this past week, the third week of March, the week after the following the Ides of March, 2024. Has been just one massive L after another for the Jews, and it's,
well. The other thing is, the Jews seem also very confident that they're alarmingly not fazed by how things are going. Like, that's the scary part, is the Jews are like still doing their weird cow shit. They're still sending Jared Kushner on to, like, yep,
well,
we're going to genocide him.
The,
like,
tunnel Jews are doing that. The tunnel Jews are doing that. The optics kikes are freaking out. I mean, they're like,
yeah, they're.
So, yeah, the tunnel Jews are, like, obliviously just, like, yes, Goyim, continue to do as we tell you, like, and, not, you know, pushing the Golem button, the remote control button on the Golem, and, like, you know, increasing bewilderment as the Golem, like, stops responding to the controls. It's really quite something to watch. Yeah, I don't want to rehash, you know, tedious, and I'm sure our audience is well aware of the Candace Owens saga, which, so again, within the span of, like, probably even closer at when you're talking about this kind of micro state,
yeah.
8 hours. So
should we just start off?
Sorry, go on.
Yes. A rabbi was intellectually defeated by a black woman. like on the merits, like on like, right, one on points in the,
well,
debate.
And,
like,
I don't even want to. Okay, here's the thing. The most impressive part to me, which the TDS guy did a pretty good job. You know, Mike in particular is very sensitive to this, and that's great. But I wouldn't even want to push it past. Like, I'm agreeing vociferously with Mike to say something that I don't think he emphasized enough, which is, it isn't just that she was right on the merits intellectually as far as having facts and logic on her side. She brutally owned him rhetorically. I mean, the way she turned around his premises and used them against him, you know, deconstructing his shit in real time, exactly in the way, not just that we do, but that, like, Mike advocates our guys to do. And, you know, don't give Jews the moral authority. Don't let them operate from the position of presumed anything. Make them justify themselves, and when they inevitably make an ass of themselves, point it out. That's exactly what she did. It was a masterclass in how to dismantle Judaism. Bravo, you know, which wasn't even what I didn't even want to set out to talk about. That, I mean, like, when I initially had this, like, oh, we should really probably, you know, do a nigger on the
it's the Russia stuff. It's the Russia, yeah,
it was because, like, she was fired what, like, 8 hours after the most devastating missile strikes of the war. Which, by the way, there, as we are recording, there are Tu-22 bombers, strategic bombers, in the air, like, right now. You know, like, they have some, I don't even know, like, who knows what, you know, please, Daddy Putin, end it all. You can end it here. You can end it once and for all, you know? But, no, like, this is not...
I'm sorry, I do have a quick Candace Owens joke that I was going to tweet out, but while we're here, fuck it. She used the NSDAP method. No, say you don't agree with the premise.
Yeah, so closely related to the Nazi. No, ask about Zionism in Israel, which she also did. That's the thing. She did a. She, it was just a masterclass in Nazi in saying no and ask about Zionism in Israel. Like she was when he would go down these irrelevant rabbit holes and try to distract her.
Yeah.
She was like, "No, we're not. We're here to talk about how you people are evil." You know, like it wasn't in a context
I
where
will
like,
say,
I haven't.
I that episode of Tedious. That episode, well, we got to shift gears out, but I haven't been able to finish that episode of Tedious or watch the interview because I find Shmuley.
It's incredibly grating.
Like 45 minutes into it. I find him so, like, I get very angry when I listen to Jews, and most often women as well. Women also sometimes have that effect. Candace does not, which is nice. Some female, and almost every Jewish voice, like, physically irks me, you know, like, in my gut, like twinge feeling. So I will have to like power through that, I guess, this weekend while I do something else. But yeah,
it's great. I mean, it's great analysis and again, mostly useful, I would say. I mean, it's very entertaining and but it's just she does such like there's a lot that we could, you know, our guys could learn from her. Like watch what she does because it's what Mike advocates in the approach that we should take when you interact with Jews or even just, you know, people who are parroting Jew propaganda. Like this is the way. But yeah, I initially wanted to talk about these missile strikes because this was already pretty substantial escalation along a number of different vectors. The single biggest thing, there were a lot of things that were hit, including dual use mechanical factories and various other kind, like there was a chemical plant that was hit.
The biggest, I think, is the Kharkov grid is apparently pretty hard.
They targeted the turbine room at the hydroelectric power plant on the Dnieper River, which is the kind of like so people have been saying for like a year and a half now that you know I'm sure people remember the strikes especially over the winter at the electrical power system and the kind, it was something in between. It was like a cope that was true, I guess, that, you know, the Ukrainians would the black arm, white arm meme, you know, of like the black arm is the Ukrainian pro Ukrainians and the white arm is the Russian doomers saying like, actually these strikes are kind of bullshit, which they were because they were essentially just targeting transformers and substations. So it was targeting the distribution of electricity, not the generation of electricity, which is a lot easier to route around because, you know, distribution is distributed. And okay, there's, you know, various inefficiencies that can be introduced, but these things are also generally a lot easier to repair. There's a lot more spare parts. It's not a real threat to the grid. What Russia just did, again, like 16 hours ago as of this recording, was blow up things that cannot be unblown up. Like these are Soviet era giant turbines that there are no spare parts for, there is no replacement for, and if there were to be some kind of a way for this thing in theory, these major foundational elements of the electrical generation process for Ukraine to be repaired, it would have to come from Russia, which means this is not getting fixed until the war is over. And it's going to introduce a permanent state of electricity shortage and all of the things attendant. Yes, the Kharkov metro is down. They're already talking about rolling blackouts. They're going to be rolling blackouts, and those rolling blackouts, unlike the ones that were, you know, over the winter in 23, the rolling blackouts were over within a couple weeks. That is not going to be the case here. There's just no way.
Also, they've kind of waited. Like, I guess it's going to be the indication this will be long term is that the short term strikes on transformers were during the winter, trying to like make them suffer in the short term to capitulate or whatever. These they waited till the spring.
This is clearly that was the other thing. I haven't seen anyone.
Well, this is clearly preparatory.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, but it's also like it's really less. The more like monstrous thing would be to do it in the fall, right, of the previous year. And like,
oh, it's giving people, yes, sure. It's not, yes, in the sense of, yes, I think that's true in terms of a humanitarian impact.
Yeah. Putin, it's not, the eternal cuck, right? You know, no matter what.
But I also think it's this has all the markings of a preparatory artillery bombardment phase for an offensive.
Thing that is I find the most interesting is that it's post election. Yeah. Traditionally, Western analysts would always say, "Oh, pre-election, pre-speech, pre." Usually, like the Western analysts would say, "Well, what is Putin doing before some event, some anniversary, something that, like some parade? He's only going to do something prior to that." And the answer is, well, actually, Western analysts, and they were never right. Western analysts just always, they would always say, "Oh, he's doing X because of events." They do. I think they were doing things like. The election is a referendum. They were not doing the war and the like events in the war to win the election. They were doing the election to get the referendum on what they're about to do.
Which, if that makes sense. I mean, I'm sorry. All this stuff about like, if you don't think that Putin won 80% conservatively, legitimately, your head's not screwed on straight. Like,
clearly, well, if you can't physically name somebody else in the election.
Yeah, right.
How do you have any idea? Like, I get it. Like. In theory, if you were like really a fucking huge Zogbot, you could say like Juan Guaido was like maybe like should have got 40.
I believe his name is Juan Giardia, but anyway, sorry.
I like Juan Guaido. That's my personal thought. But like, if you can't it's like who was running against Castro, right? Like, presumably somebody at some point ran against Castro. Like, you know, if you don't know who these people are, they're not winning. Like, they're not going to win.
The Russian like with Attitude guys spoke for essentially the hardcore nationalist faction in voting for the communist as a protest vote against Putin.
As like, because he's harder.
Yeah, because Putin's not hard enough. Like, yeah. we want to get, you know, bring these holes to heal like we did under Grandpa Stalin. You know, like this is Putin's not getting the job done. So, Putin very clearly and you know the opposition, which is again the Communist Party in Russia is the opposition party there, has hovered around 20% in the polls. I think they got like 13 or 17%. It was less than 20% when all was said and done.
And the third party is also like right wing. It's like tradition something. They're like also like it's
ultra orthodox, ultra Christian orthodox or something.
They're like right, like they're the right wing coded part. Like they're both right wing coded, but like they're right.
So yes, Putin clearly took this as a mandate, as he is well entitled to, and not only that, also it's a response to we had talked, I guess, off air. We hadn't. It was in that lull between episodes. About the Belgorod incursion, which, you know, now is kind of a moot point because it's just over. But I think the relevance is that this is the way I interpret it. I think a lot of people did is at irrespective of the kind of broader war aims and strategy in terms of, you know, you want to disrupt enemy logistics prior to. Probably there's going to be an increase in activity and maybe even something like maneuver warfare coming up in the late spring, early summer. We'll see.
But I don't think the Belgorod push was to try to like icebreaker the Russians. Like, I don't think they were trying to like, you know, disrupt their.
I'm talking about the missile strikes. What I'm saying is, I think the Belgorod thing was purely PR. That was just
when it gets into weird. Like the Putin is like the luckiest man on earth.
Because he has such retarded opponents, or
well, no, because like this is like there are a lot of conspiracy theories in Russia that like the FSB was behind a lot of his early work apartment complex explosions going back to Chechnya, all these things. It does seem like the enemies of Russia, like whenever Putin is like kind of shaky or like, for instance, attacking Russia proper pre-election in a bid to like shake the faith. It seems like were I an FSB member who had like infiltrated the Ukrainian general staff,
You would encourage them to do.
We should send like a
right.
We should like see if we can like send like a single brigade unsupported and just kind of push them north across the border. And that's gonna like help.
Well, unsupported, but like with lavishly outfitted. I mean, they had basically, as I understand it, they were equipped at the. Men to armor ratio of a heavy armor
of a pre-war, yeah,
of a heavy brigade, yeah. And they had like two of, I think, 34 engineering mine clearing vehicles in existence, of the whatever specification, you know, the best engineering vehicles
the Leo,
that NATO
the
has.
Leo one or
The Leo one, I believe, yeah. And two of them were sent, and both were lost as a result of this just completely retarded, strategically, I don't even know what the, I mean, just vacuous, strategically vacuous.
Retarded.
Like, yeah.
But I want to bring up that it being retarded and, like, basically helped, I'm sure helped Putin get his fucking 88%.
I'm sure, yeah, right. It took him from 87 to 88, exactly, yeah.
But that's what's about, like, that retarded shit that, like, that Putin, like, So we are currently, whatever faction did this, ISIS seems to be the front runner. Maybe
I've heard rumors that, I haven't seen it myself, like, I don't speak Arabic, but supposedly ISIS has claimed responsibility.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned, is
very
just
early for that to be real.
That's just the CIA.
Yes.
That's just like, okay, so actually it was Uncle C's hand.
Yeah. Yes. But no matter what faction did it, it's like, oh, we're doing hard endorsement of whatever Putin does to... Because, like, as George Bush figured out, you get to respond to terrorism at your pace, right? Like, you can do literally whatever you want. Like, you could invade... Like, everyone knows when, like, Saddam Hussein took down the Twin Towers, like, maybe it didn't happen. It didn't happen, but, like, you make it real. Like, as you respond to terrorism, like, you know, you kind of, like, create a certain kind of reality.
Oh, what was that quote? I'd like to look at it. I'm not going to look at it. Yeah, that was, like, a famous quote from the era, which I guess you're sort of obliquely referencing, is there was some, like, George W. Bush apparatchik who, you know, was...
Oh, we make... It was like, yeah, we make
you
reality,
people
right?
respond... Yeah, he's like, you journalists, you think that you're, like, reporting on events, but you say you're reporting on reality, but we make our own reality.
Yeah.
You know,
is that Rumsfeld? That sounds Rumsfeld.
I think it might have been. Yeah,
that sounds very Rumsfeld.
I think it was someone in the Department of Defense. I don't. It was like an undersecretary. I'd have to look it up. But anyway, yeah. No, that's very much has been the attitude. And I will say, I think there's something.
There are already conspiracy theories that Putin did this.
Well, because it's such a horror. I mean,
Well, it's just it's like terrible optics. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, like,
right.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
what possible? Right. What do you gain out of this? It's hard to even comprehend what the thought process there.
Like, if you're
is.
A Chechen dissident, which I think is one of the theories that, like, it's like ISIS, like,
Well, that's just
Chechens.
Like caved in head Wojak right. Like, it's like I saw Wyatt, you know, like the Holocaust denier Wyatt, like make that
Holocaust affirmer.
Sorry, Wyatt. That's what I meant. Yes, yeah, he would never. Yeah, right. Yes, Holocaust affirming Wyatt is like, I think it was the mud slimes. It was the mud slimes because they hate Russia.
Like, okay, I mean, like. Like, if it was Chechens, you're gonna force Kadyrov to kill so many fucking Chechens.
Kadyrov is, can you imagine? Like, obviously, like, though, it wasn't. Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
I don't think the Chechens have, like, implied something. Like, the Chechen, the Free Chechen, whatever, have, like, made a post, but, like, that's just info ops. I'm sure.
Yeah, just being edgy or whatever. Yeah,
like, it could legitimately be ISIS. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, there were initial reports, which, who knows, were men with beards. I saw. I'm not going to look up, like, the gore photos or something, but I saw some kind of grainy footage. I couldn't tell if they had beards or not. Not that that would be dispositive in any case. We'll find out. I saw some. There's someone has been at least one individual has been detained. Not clear if he was one of the attackers.
I do know. I saw some, like, Russian people commenting that it's relatively common for the police in Russia to, like, when, like, things like this happen, like a bank gets robbed, like they are not, like, being arrested, they're being, like, detaining employees of the, like, they're going,
sure,
like, the cops just grab, like, people who, like,
whoever,
are at the,
yeah,
venue, and, like, they're just like, hey, talk to us, what's going on, like,
what
how
the
do
fuck
you,
happened, yeah,
how do you get around, or just, like, this building has an ongoing thing, how do you get around the building, like,
yeah,
a guy being grabbed outside of,
well,
it,
no, he was, I mean, he was being arrested, he was handcuffed behind his back and, like, being, you know, vanned. So,
not really, maybe, but
which is not, just, again, not to say necessarily that this individual was one of the attackers,
yeah,
but he was being vanned, you know.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, if they have captured, like, one of them alive,
I hope they do. I hope it was one of the attackers, because that'll put a lot of thing that'll clarify the situation very quickly. Although,
there are Chechens in ISIS too. Like, that's always been a kind,
yeah,
of a thing, right? So,
as far as the Islamic thing is concerned, I would have to say that to my mind is evidence against an Islamist hypothesis, just because I have a hard time imagining that they would be willingly taken alive, but maybe he just pussied out at the last minute, or I mean, who knows what you know. Obviously, if you do something like this, you are just a giant pussy anyway, but I would expect I don't know, something better from your run-of-the-mill Islamic terrorist, you know, than to allow yourself to be taken alive.
Yeah. Yeah. A million things could have happened, too. Like, I don't think... the impression I got through that picture did seem like that probably isn't, like, the guy. Like, you know? Like the,
right.
You know,
right.
I feel like... I don't know shit about how the Russians do things, but, like, generally you do... Like, because he still has his hoodie up and stuff, you know? Like, he still had his...
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this is the kind of thing we'll find out more soon.
When we grab terrorists, we strip them, like, actually naked.
Right.
And that guy wasn't stripped naked, and if it was, like,
if he had a vest or something, exactly, yeah.
You strip terrorists naked when you capture them because of vests, and a million other reasons, but, like, that guy had all his clothes on and a hoodie and still up. It's like, that probably wasn't, like, a...
Yeah.
Like, if that was an employee or somebody related who they didn't want to get, like, you know, a media mob around because... It was some other thing, you know? Who knows? Sure.
But anyway, so I guess we haven't... So, yes, there was this, within hours of both this missile strike and Candace Owens being fired by Ben Shapiro...
Declaring LGBT political homosexuality is a terrorist organization.
Like, okay, I missed this, actually.
Putin declared political homosexuality to be a terror. Like
well, that was the last straw. Yeah.
Yeah, they went and did one, right? That would be very funny. If, like, this is actually homosexual terrorism in Russia, like, that would be wild.
I mean, de facto, it is. I mean, this is objectively a pro-gay terrorist attack.
True. But, yeah, so, yeah, Putin declared, they call it, like, LGBT ideology. It means, like, just being politically homosexual.
Right.
Is a proscribed group in the same way they prescribe, like, Nazism.
Which based. Is... Oh, well, that's, yeah, unfortunately, well, whatever. Yeah, whatever. But, I mean, again, that's just one of those. I actually, after this interview, with Tucker, where Putin was kind of low-key doing a World War II revisionism, I have to imagine... I'm not saying that he's our guy. Obviously, Putin is essentially the Russian version of a Buchananite conservative. Okay. But nevertheless, I mean...
Buchanan's a revisionist, so...
Yeah, and for Putin in particular, a Russian, I should say, to go out there and say, well, you know, the Poles kind of had it coming... You know, with the
I don't know if that's actually that may have been a majority opinion in Russia for the Poles had it coming is like often Russian opinion. I'm not going to credit him as the innovator. You know,
maybe that's a good point. But anyway, yeah, I mean, the point is that Putin is smart enough to understand things that, you know, and that he's going to have to put things a certain way, and that the Russian people are with regard to, you know, as they call it, the Great Patriotic War. I do think this is a thing that we can, you know, work to build these bridges between, you know, our guys in the West and our, you know, people who should be our guys in Russia. But it's going to take time because, yeah, the experience that the Russians had of the Second World War is just, you know, it's tough for them to get over. And it's hard, look at, as we were discussing earlier, like when the hardcore Russian nationalist faction that's in opposition to the Russian government is the Communist Party. Like, these things are very, it's just kind of an ideologically confused environment to try to, you know, yeah, how do you separate quote unquote Nazism as, which functionally the way that it gets talked about in like Russian Telegram channels and stuff. And I've even seen it essentially outright defined Nazism to them just is anti-Russian it's not necessarily any kind of ideological content to it.
I would, too, if I was to get bigger brained on that, I would say it is Nazism to Russians is imperialism at Russian expense.
Sure, yeah.
If you're doing imperialism at Russian expense,
that's Nazism, yeah.
And that's, you know, fine.
It's not something that we need to, like, worry about at this point in time, really. I am tired of
actual guys with like Nazi tattoos don't actually get oppressed in Russia. Like, that's not like a real thing. Like, I'm sorry. Like, there are like neo-Nazis who get arrested in Russia because they do like actual retarded shit in public.
Well, it's like the Aryan Brotherhood. I mean, are they ideological Nazis or are they drug dealers with swastika tattoos? You know?
Yeah. And I don't really care that much about like, you know, like, oh, this, like, because every time I see, like, some Russian who's, like, a neo-Nazi who's oppressed by the government, he's either doing like, horrendous retard shit, like, he just stabs a random fucking, like, Dagestani, or he, like, literally is defected to join the Ukrainian army.
Right,
like,
right.
And I don't find either of those things, like, particularly, like, not like Gandhi over here, not like a political prisoner, you know? Like,
right. Yeah, it's not like he's, like, you know, writing articles about, you know, how we're going to analyze Mein Kampf in in our current
situation. And the guys who were doing that kind of stuff, and, like, your Sputnik and Pogrom guys, those guys all just, like, okay, well, we got, like, the government had an issue, the Putinist government had a problem with, like, the actual, like, what I would consider intelligent fascists or the smart guys in Sputnik and Pogrom, who were doing, like, fascism but Russian, and they were doing, like, very intellectual type stuff, very smart work. The government shut them down. They're like, okay, that's fine. Like, you're shutting us down. We're not going to go ahead and, like, join the Ukrainian army over that. We're going we're going to start independent projects and do something, you know, do something else. It's, like, not the end of the
world.
I'm
going to fight for Global Homo and Zog because I'm so mad at, like, the Russian government. So, so yeah, this horrible attack, which I guess there's currently
50. The numbers are kind of
I saw it 10 and then 40. Is it 50 now killed?
I saw 50 and 100 wounded, but with ongoing fire and, like, fire rescue attempts being made. Like, allegedly, it's pretty horrifying. Like, it was a multi-tiered concert hall, and, like, the bottom tier was set on fire, and there are, I don't know how it's, like, I've heard things. I've even heard, like, recent, not within the last 2 hours, people saying, oh, it's actually an ongoing, like, you know, emergency situation, so who the fuck knows. RWA put out that last night, there or the night prior to that, there was, like, a Russian nationalist pop singer performing.
Well, no, okay, yeah. Well, so it's actually more than... Okay, so it, I'll go, because I wanted to mention this, and I'm glad you brought it up. So the U.S. Embassy in Russia on March... what was it? 7th. Yes, March 7th. Put out a warning, and I remember when this happened, and people, myself included, were making comments at the time, like, oh, I guess Zog is going to do a terrorist attack in Russia, because the, yes, the U.S. Embassy put out a warning, quote, the embassy is monitoring reports that extremists have imminent plans to target large gatherings in Moscow to include concerts, and U.S. citizens should be advised to avoid large gatherings over the next 48 hours, and that was on March 7th. Now, Russians with Attitude noted on their Telegram and Twitter that there's this I guess he's he looks a fine Aryan looking chap, Shaman is his name.
Looks kind of faggy, but whatever.
You know. I don't know, he's doing the kind of fashy haircut thing. I don't know, whatever. I'll just read their thing because why not? It says, on the 9th of March, Shaman was supposed to have a show in the Kokas City Hall. Shaman is a patriotic Russian pop singer whom Ukrainians and anti-Putin opposition consider to be a weapon of Russian propaganda. On the contrary, the band Picnic, whose show came under attack today, is totally apolitical. Could it be that originally they were planning to attack Shaman's concert? And then they continue, Picnic is an irrelevant boomer rock band, but Russian picnics are nothing like alfresco dining. Russian picnic usually involves grilling meat, a.k.a. shashlik. Terrorists have set Crocus on fire on purpose. Put two and two together and try to guess what Russian-speaking nation is famous for this type of humor. It does seem plausible that the plan A was to massacre people who attended the concert of the most popular patriotic singer in Russia, Shaman, on the 9th of March, in the same city of Krasnogorsk, the same Crocus City Hall. It fits the U.S. Embassy message's timing perfectly. But they couldn't do it for some reason. Yet the terrorists were already prepared and knew what to do. So plan B was to massacre people who attended the concert of Picnic just for the sake of a linguistic play on words and a desire to wreak havoc in the Russian rear. The symbolism is still there. I'm not, you know, this is obviously speculative, and I'm not necessarily...
They want it to do Ukrainians so badly, too.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if the Ukrainian FSB had a hand in this, but...
I actually don't. I mean, who knows? We're speculating with such early, like, almost little information.
I said I wouldn't be surprised. I would actually bet against it.
I would be very surprised because the Ukrainians are not that stupid. This is, like, just terrorism. Like, there's they're just doing terror. Like, this is not a, like, there's no, like,
yeah, sure. Even the bombing of Darya Dugina wasn't. I mean, that was like sort of arguably, you know, a kind of ideological assassination in a way. This is just fucking retarded. Yeah.
Well, the Ukrainians also, they also, like, wave the flag when they do this shit, too. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, we did that shit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, this is just bad optics. And And so I don't know, but I do. I definitely do think that there is something to. I just think, again, as soon as the U.S. embassy put out that statement, I was like, okay, great. Here, when is the school shooting going to happen? And then, you know, it happened not. Yes, it's true. Not when there was this probably what they wanted to attack the concert of this patriotic singer, but the day before Purim, which, as we all know, thanks to Rabbi whatever the fuck was it Botiech or whatever the, but it's, we're not celebrating, you know, Jewish holidays. They don't celebrate the slaughter of their enemies. They celebrate the day after the slaughter of their enemies when they're resting. So yes, Purim is the holiday where they celebrate the day after they slaughtered all their enemies. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence that this is the day before Purim. I just don't.
Yeah, I think it. So there is a pattern of Islamic terrorism that it's relatively easy to spin up. Like you just need to get some guys into some places at a certain point. And I think that the CIA and the all intelligence services are pretty good at like finding it, but sometimes they just get through you. But when another like government is doing it, like aiding them, it's a lot harder. Like the early Al Qaeda, the Al Qaeda's early work, which is really good. Like as a bit of an Al Qaeda hipster,
I'm a fan of their early work. Yeah,
I'm a fan of the USS Cole operation
before they Nairobi sold bombings. Out.
Yeah, before they went mainstream.
Yeah.
Their ops were generally like relatively small and self-contained to like a 5-man cell. ISIS went real wild with it with these like 20-man, like the Eagles of Death Metal concert in Paris.
Basically, this is the equivalent. I mean, I guess the Bataclan is a little smaller than this venue, but it's pretty much the same
operation.
Guys,
they had more attackers. This has let's say five attackers seems to be the number that we're getting. So it's a more efficient. This seems more like if I was to get it put on my old fucking, my old terrorist fighting hat, this seems more Al Qaeda type than ISIS. Just by the scale of that number, ISIS guys historically are using like big, like the Bataclan was a lot of guys, like a shitload. I want to say it was like more than 10, and this is just 5, putting up similar numbers because of, you know,
I've heard as many as, I think I've heard 10, I've heard 20 for the number. Yeah. So again, this okay, is could be,
yeah, we know so little, but like, right. Based on the story that I, like if it's sure. the lower numbers,
there were only
of guys,
like 5 guys in the grainy video that I saw. So, yeah. You know,
who knows?
And people, there's a well-known phenomenon where, in these kinds of situations, you think there are more attackers or whatever than there actually are. This is pretty much across the board.
Yeah. ISIS attackers historically use like 1 or 2 or like 15.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really do that kind of cell type traditional vintage Al-Qaeda stuff where you're doing like, you know, 4 or 5 guys in a boat, you know, or assassinating the, you know, Northern Alliance guys in Afghanistan or, you know, like the... This if it's 5, it's kind of Al Qaeda y, which means it's like kind of CIA. So, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
No, this is definitely there's no Ukrainian FSB involvement is a question mark. American CIA involvement is not, as far as I'm concerned. This is just obviously just a completely disgusting.
Well, the thing is also the CIA is the American intelligence service. They just set up these systems of guys, right? Like,
right.
They don't. They're probably not like dispatching them on missions, but they're like. Okay, these guys are the guys you're good. We're just to keep
you. Well, people you, like, often, yeah, I mean, because of like
money
Hollywood,
and ideas into these guys, you know,
exactly. Like, Hollywood movies, I think, play into this probably in some sense deliberately with an eliding of the distinction between agent and officer or asset. Like the actual people employed by the CIA are not quote unquote agents. Agents or assets are. Like the people on the ground that are run by officers who are the people that staff the CIA in a hierarchical sense. CIA officers are the ones who are running the human assets. And that could be at a level removed or 2 level removed. Often it'll be, you know, the way it works is, for example, the teacher at a school will be an asset. And then the teacher at the school, for example, would have, you know, students who would be involved in or whatever. Right. And this is, there's a kind of hands-offness to it. It doesn't, you know, they don't want to get their hands dirty to the extent that they can avoid it. So, yes, it's not...
Famously, Al-Qaeda ran in a very similar way, where Bin Laden was the top guy, but he was not a operational commander in any way.
That's right.
He would be getting, like, guys would come to him with a pitch, like, hey, USS Cole, hey, Nairobi, hey, all this stuff in Sudan, hey, all this stuff in Afghanistan, or hey, you know, we're going to do this 9/11 bit. And he would give them, like, a go-ahead, like, a theological, like, check on their stuff. Like, hey, does this make sense, like, theologically, which it always did. Or presumably usually did. And then the money. Like, he was, like, giving them, much like I say, it's very how the CIA runs things, where, like, the guys come to you and say, hey, I'm thinking of doing this, or I might do this. And if they like it, they'll give some money, or they'll tell you no if they don't like
it. Or they'll give you maps, you know, or whatever, like the intel.
Or forged passports into Russia,
right.
Or forged visas from Uzbekistan into Russia.
They don't need to give you, you know, guns. They don't need to provide you with military training. That you can take care of that on your own. But the things that you can't get on your own, they're more than happy to help. And I am certain that that's...
This is one thing I think Rightoids have problems with, because like they'll talk about, oh, it's like Glowies or CIA. It's like, actually, it's not really how they run. Like,
Right. It's not like they're CIA officers with their badges, you know, just dressing up in khaki shorts and polo shirts. It's like the
CIA is more likely to pay somebody who dislikes you to like dislike you more,
right?
You know, or like. You know, to like that's kind of their kind of MO generally. It's like actually running stuff, like the famous, the worst CIA atrocity of the last decade was the death squads in Afghanistan that were like helicoptering in and just killing whole boarding schools full of boys because the boarding school was like allegedly Taliban aligned. Like that was probably the most horrific thing we were doing over there. But only like there were CIA agents occasionally nearby, but those were just like Afghanistan Army Special Forces guys that were getting extra pay and like ideas like, hey, what if, and like piloting and like, and helicopter transport, like, hey, what if we dropped you off at this town and paid you double? Would you kill everyone in the boys' school? Wouldn't that be cool? Like, that's what they say. So they're not like saying, do this thing. They're saying, hey, I'll bring you here. It's a Taliban sympathetic village. All the young men are here. You kind of do what you do.
Thing.
Like,
yeah.
Like, they're not like spelling it out, which is why they're hard to catch often. Of course, they're also like Americans, so they're dumb. So you can, you'll get them eventually, or you'll figure out what happened at least.
Which is, I think, spinning forward. I don't want to speculate, and there's a lot. I'm sure there's going to be more information coming out soon. But several things off the top of my head. Number one, in the United States, you know, we've kind of become inured to these sorts of events. It's just, everybody kind of understands the United States has a lot of, you know, it's a kind of clinically insane society that just produces horrifically violent episodes on an increasingly regular basis. That is not true of pretty much, you know, outside of Africa, most of the rest of the world, and especially not in Russia. And this is not the...
Well, Russia historically has, like, a big reaction as well. Like, Russia has had things like Belsen, like, the apartment complex bombing,
with the theater and... Which is pretty much... I think that's the closest analog for this situation,
And, the problem... So, unlike... So, in the case of France with the Bataclan, which this seems to be also pretty analogous to, The France was like, you know, they were basically constraining, like, all that kind of turned into was like more votes for Le Pen, right? Like, whatever. But because they were like, oh, they were trying to get a handle on like right wing racialist sentiment.
Well, yeah, France is.
Racialist sentiment already rules Russia. Things only get more racialister, you know?
Germany is maybe, is probably the most cucked country in Europe in terms of being directly under the thumb of American imperialist oppression. France has a real military, not enough of a real military to take on Russia, which, again, another kind of thing in the background here is Macron's been making these insane saber-rattling noises. Maybe we'll get to that in a second. But the thing is, okay, yes, France has its own, on paper, nuclear-capable submarines, et cetera, and is a real country in a way that Germany is not. However, they are still very much at this point in the current year plus eight occupied by Zog, and which is why I think you in terms of the Bataclan and its aftermath, essentially France had to do wasn't Norm Macdonald's thing
during that whole like.
There were a bunch all at once. Yeah, there were a bunch all at once. I don't know, but definitely the Bataclan was one of the events in the leading up to Norm Macdonald's joke about how terrible it would be if anyone thought anything bad about Muslims or something. I don't remember exactly.
Oh, that, I know. As a Norm fan, it was my deepest fear is that terrorists would somehow find and detonate a nuclear device in New York City. Can you imagine the backlash to peaceful Muslims were that to happen? It's unthinkable.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for the yes. So, but the thing is, it was humiliating for the French for that to essentially be forced on them as their reaction to have what is the branch of the American government that comes when a nigger kills your kid?
And, oh, Department of Justice. Yeah.
Yeah. They send
reaction team.
Thank you. Yeah. CRT. They send a
government, CRT. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. They send a government goon. With the CRT to like encourage you with a baseball bat not to do
they offer you
racism.
Some pitiful amount of money too. I bet it's like they offer you like 12 grand too. I bet it's like insultingly low. You know,
yeah.
We'll give you 12 grand if you fucking.
So like on a civilizational scale, that's what the U.S. did to France after the Bataclan. But Russia is neither occupied by Zog nor like they're just that's not going to be the reaction here. So and Medvedev is already out there saying if Ukrainian leadership was involved in this, we're just going to kill them. You know, there was a speaking of missile attacks maybe a week or two ago, there was a famously missile attack in I believe Odessa, where the Greek prime minister was hining over a couple like what was it like a dozen 1940s vintage artillery pieces. Yeah. That are going to win the war, right?
The issue is they also weren't 105 millimeter shells, which was kind of weird. Like it was a lot of. It was
I don't think they, it was 90 millimeter shells, which I don't even know what you would put those in, and I think some 105. I think the 105 was 105 caliber howitzers, which okay, I mean, it's I guess better than nothing, but still is. Anyway, so yes, the Greeks are transferring the absolute dregs of their last reserves to the Ukraine, and at a ceremony, which I guess another side note was while we're catching people up, did you hear this theory about there were it was Armchair Warlord who put this out there? What was going on at the time? Did you see his take on this?
Of the Greek thing?
No. This was okay. So this feels like an ancient time ago, but just because of how fast things are moving. But yeah, so basically, Armchair Warlord's theory was because there was some kind of ceremony that was attacked, like 300 meters. Zelensky had been at this ceremony involving Ukrainian troops, and then he was physically next to the Greek prime minister when this some kind of warehouse or something with a bunch of Ukrainian troops. Was hit by a missile and they all died. So the question is, okay, why were there all these troops in this warehouse next to Zelensky separately from this sort of diplomatic thing going on? And his theory, which it, frankly to me checks out, I mean obviously again speculative, but just trying to make sense of events, came on the heels of an attack, a successful attack on a ship in the Russian Navy that was sunk in the Black Sea. By a mass seaborne drone swarm attack. So the theory was basically that this attack, he was even going so far as to posit that it was maybe even a let it happen on purpose type scenario, where because the ship that sunk had earlier been damaged. And this was like publicly known that it had, I guess from there were airborne drones that had attacked it in port. It had sustained some damage. It was repaired. It was out at the sea. And then it went down, fortunately, supposedly, with no loss of life among the Russian hands on deck. The interesting thing was basically the timing. And the story he was telling, which again, sort of, you could check it out if you for our audience if you care. But basically, the idea was Zelensky was convening the Black Sea region operators who would have been centered around Odessa for like geographic reasons, right? Basically pinning medals on their chest saying, you know, good job, you sunk another battleship or whatever. It wasn't a battleship, it was a little frigate or something. But
I think I mentioned last episode or that it was a it's a transport. It's a equivalent of
that's right, it was a transport. No, we LST, didn't talk about it.
A little
we
bit of LST.
Right.
The Russians have been fucking up majorly, basically in the Black Sea fleet over the last 6 months. The Ukrainians have basically destroyed or damaged or fucked up every single like ship you would use for a marine landing into Odessa.
Yes.
Like it's just over. It's ogre. There will be no cool marine landing in Odessa.
But they can still be airborne, and I'm sure you know. Yeah, but it would
but
be
like it's like
there's no they, there's no sea there's no seaborne amphibious assault. Unfortunately, that would be
like it's like,
so
like
Kino. Could you imagine the Kino? That would be oh, it would have been so cool. But whatever. Yeah, it's ogre for sure. It's unfortunate. I still think there's very good chances of an operation on Odessa, which will, I have to imagine, will involve some sort of naval blockade. But I can't imagine we're going to see any kind of littoral operation. It's just not with this last loss. It's just not in the cards.
Like it was already at the card. They're spiking the football. You know, these things are. Which also shows how bad like transport ships are. Just basic. Rocket, big rocket catching vehicles, you know, like they just whatever.
But
generally in the broader political context, I have seen Ukrainian sources, not like the government, but like they're trying to in before like more Russian stuff. They're saying that they're doing like the Russian government announces like general or full mobilization, or like they're trying to like, I guess like if they call it, the Russians won't do. I don't think the Russians are going to do like the full. A full generalization anyway,
but they don't need to. I mean, they're going to do, they will do it if they have to, but I don't, it's hard to see why they would have to. You could, I guess, believe or not believe the figures, but the figures coming out of the Russian government is they're getting 1,000 volunteers a day, something like that.
I wonder if that's going to increase with this.
I have to imagine that it will. Yeah. I have to imagine that it will. So, you know, they have more than enough volunteers. They have their regular mobilization schedule for essentially their version of selective service. They have a pretty. They have a giant manpower pool. They really. Only
oh,
begun.
Also, in that same thing, we forgot that the Kremlin spokesman just started calling it war. Now he stopped.
That was what I was gonna. That's what I thought you were gonna say. Which is as I understand it, still that's like him talking. That's not.
Yeah.
Legalese, you know, formal
Russia,
language.
War in Russia means certain things.
Yes.
Like constitutionally, and the Russians, despite the perception of it's just a dictatorship. Even the Soviet period, Russians are major spurgs for legalism. Mm-hmm. They like the government has to have everything, like, dot all the things, sign all the T's, whatever. Like when they called the invasion of Ukraine a counterterrorism operation, that's because like that had a certain.
Well,
thing
my
the
understanding
could do
is
that would
they still haven't even done
use.
That. That I don't. Did they actually? I think that's still.
I think.
In the wings. I don't even think that they've reached that level of escalation officially yet.
Special is less than counterterrorism.
That's right. My understanding is special military operation is a lesser status than counterterrorism, which is the status before actual legal war. My strong suspicion is this will be not even a fig leaf. I mean, this is just all the just objectively justification. I mean, there has now literally been a terrorist attack, and you know, Ukrainians can deny involvement or whatever, but. Even before that, when you take into consideration the situation in Belgorod and all this kind of stuff, there's more, you know, Putin's going to have to appease the hardcore nationalists, both within his coalition and in the Communist Party opposition. And I think the instinct is going to be to raise raise it to the level of a counterterrorism operation. And I hope they do.
What a thing, right?
Like, well, yeah.
Like Putin really is, like, in terms of, like, just, like, Putin is, like, has the devil's own luck in this respect. Like there's no way, I'm sure it's, like, bad, right? Like, but, like, there's no way they weren't, like, shit, all right, so we're going to take this war one step further. There's risks of alienating the people. Like, there's people doing these, like, calculations internally. And then, like, they see that, like, oh, I guess I guess we can do whatever we want now. Like, back to square with zero. Like, you can, if they want to go to mobilize more people or increase conscription or XYZ thing, or yep, the Russian government has bought 6 months to a year of pretty much unquestionable, like, they can do whatever they want. Like, that's kind of how these things go. Like, you get 6 months to a year of, you know, they could literally, if it turns out they're from, like, Turkmenistan, they could invade Turkmenistan. Like, if they want to. Or just, like, as an example, like, just, if they want to just do some random bullshit, like, there's no, I guess, like, there will be no collapse. The imminent collapse is, kind of averted for now. All the political capital in the world that they could ask for, they're gonna, whatever law they want to pass. If you are a Russia bro, by the way, listening to this somehow, start agitating for concealed carry now. This is, like, also one thing that America kind of got this.
A good guy with a gun could have.
I argue that concealed carry was one of the big, like, thing we got out of, like, the war on terror and, like, terrorism in America. Like, concealed carry is almost universal in America now, and the governments don't actually mind it. If you start maybe pushing, just ask nicely, see if you can, you know, carry a handgun around. You can see if you can get that right. It's
actually one of the things that created the possibility for this massacre to happen was that the security guards at the front of the concert hall were unarmed, which speaks to Russia being a, you know, high trust,
orderly, peaceful society.
Yeah.
Which is weird because in Western Europe they're fucking like,
yeah,
they're racked up, but they're like, yeah, ready to go.
Oh no!
Like,
in Western Europe, the carabinieri, you know, have long guns as they patrol down the street, like in public squares. Yeah, yeah. So,
like,
you know,
traffic cops in Madrid have like G36s. It's wild.
So yeah, Russia is gonna. I think this is just, you know, this is what is it? Part and parcel of being in a blah blah blah.
Yeah. I wonder if you do see, if it is Iranian, like, if you do see, this is one thing that, like, this is very internal Russian politics, if it is a, like, a Muslim of some stripe.
Well, I have some breaking news for you. Hamas has condemned the attacks and expressed solidarity with the Russian people. So there you go. Okay. Yeah, and I actually have some, the official death toll is now 146.
Jeez, that's a lot. That's about what it was in Bataclan, right? Like, yeah. It's 115,
I think,
or
it's
130.
More. Yeah, again, probably more little, people. Probably more people at the place because it's a bigger venue. But still, that's. This is again. Yeah, this is not. Sorry, what were you gonna say?
Well, it's also in Russian culture. It's been a bit of a. It's kind of almost libertarian type reaction. Like, they don't like seeing, like, because of the post-Soviet period. Like, you don't really see outside, like, the actual border of Russia, like, internal checkpoints and internal border guards with arms is still kind of, like, not taboo, but kind of weird. Like, armed police are not uncommon, but they're like, you know, like, they're it's still kind of like a, like, unarmed security is common in Russia because Russians, I think, prefer it as a kind of reaction to the post-Soviet days. And that might change over this, but it didn't change during Chechnya, so maybe not.
I'm not sure that that will change. I mean, it might, but I think the bigger ramifications of this is not so much going to be right away in terms of internal Russian society, but diplomatically, this is it's just going to change, which the tenor of the war, which was already changing, but I think this is between Belgorod and this and the attacks on electrical infrastructure, and now, you know, I know we didn't even get to it, but you know, before this terrorist attack, there were something I saw reports, didn't seem more substantial than, I wouldn't call them rumors, but I would call them reports, of French and German and some other NATO member nation nationals, if not uniform personnel.
I'm seeing, of course, more stuff from Russia Shill saying, actually, the ISIS responsibility thing is fake now.
People are saying that it's people. There's competing claims about whether ISIS is claiming responsibility or not. Some people say they have. Some people, Russia, apparently Sputnik, Russian, or RT, Russian state media, is saying that that's fake. But other people are saying that official ISIS, recognized ISIS channels are saying that it's real.
But also,
so who
like,
knows?
there could be a Russian effort to spin this into it's the Ukrainians. Like, it's absolutely possible that, like, Russia could just, you know, dust off the old Pravda machine, and it's counter-revolutionaries, it's Ukrainites, whatever they want to call it. Like, if even if it is, like, was Muslims, like, okay, like, oh, they're Chechens from the Chechen Free whatever force in the Ukrainian army. Like, you can spin, like, if Russia wants to spin this as the Ukrainians, they absolutely will. That's extremely possible.
I have no problem believing that the trigger pullers were bearded jihadis. I mean, that's may or may not end up being the case. There's some indication that they were, you know, trained soldiers, which also, I mean, they could, you know, it could be both. But it could, even if they were bearded jihadis who were the trigger pullers, doesn't mean it was you know, the relevant way to analyze this is as some kind of Islamist thing. That's just silly.
Well, yeah, also it means, like, it's the CIA, right? Like,
right, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't, maybe the specific people involved thought that they were doing this for Islam, but that doesn't mean that that's, yeah.
Like, the Ukrainians do have, like, you know, the network, well, everybody has the networks to get guns and arms into Russia and in the hands of people, you know, like, it's not actually, it could be the Ukrainians, but I don't know. There's all kind of, it's hard to, like, assign guilt yet, and, like, to some degree, the Russians will decide who did it, you know? Like, it doesn't matter who actually did it. Like,
right.
Listen, the Odessa power plant has done it, like, at a certain point, like, the workers of, you
very
know.
Much. Very much so.
Like, the Kiev electrical substations must have done this, you know, it's like, if they want. So, there's some degree of that. I do think, you know, it'd be nice if, you know, this war would be over faster because of this,
Well, you had—I don't know that we discussed it. We discussed it on air, but you said something I think that was very true, which was, you know, it would had Russia mobilized 2 million. Not that was necessarily politically possible, but had Russia mobilized and sent in a 2 million man strong army, they probably both sides would have fewer casualties. The Ukrainians, yeah, you know, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians would probably not be dead, right?
Just the city of Kharkiv alone has, like, the fact that Kharkiv wasn't taken in the initial push, I think, is like a horrifying thing that the Russians did. Like, they failed to take Kharkiv, they basically exposed an entire massive millions of people to the conscription regime of, you know, their enemies.
Well, I mean, the Russian intelligence services, you know, going all the way back at least as far as the days of the Tsars, have been, well, bound up in the Russian imperial power structure, which is the kind of longstanding animosity, structural animosity between the military and the intelligence services is reflected in, you know, Zhukov was the grand, you know, General Zhukov, who essentially won the war for the Soviets on the ground, you know, was sort of forcibly retired and then died in his, you know, off the beaten path, rural country home under kind of mysterious circumstances, right? And this is not at all uncommon. So there's like the extent to which Putin is a spook. You know, he is a KGB guy, and KGB niggas is just built different. and he looks at it, I think, in some ways, you know, there's upsides and downsides. And yes, I think the
well, also one thing KGB niggas are underrated is how much they are like also kind of pussies. Like, historically, the KGB were not doing, like, the cool stuff. It was generally, like, in Africa, for instance, it was almost never the actual KGB on the ground. It was, like, the Cubans. Like, the Cubans were actually doing, like, they were the force behind, like, Russian subversion in Africa. It was, like, no, like the, oh, that Russians will send maybe arms and they'll, like, back some moderate communist party somewhere. And then Castro would show up and be like, no, we're sending, like, 5,000 guys with tanks. And, like, actually do the thing. The KGB is very conservative, historically. Much more so than we get credit for, as, like, the boogeyman kind of thing.
Exactly. And Putin's approach was, well, we don't need to treat this as a military conflict, and, you know, we can resolve it without it, you know, we can sort of show, could do a display of force and send a bunch of guys, park them outside the capital and do this whole bit. And, yeah, it was, I don't want to say that I, if it had worked, it would have been great. Well, depending on the end result in terms of a peace treaty, because there was always a good chance that was going to result, could only have resulted in essentially kicking the can down the road and allowing Ukraine and NATO to build up further and having to fight this war just from a worse position in 10 years. So who knows? But yeah, once it was clear that that wasn't going to work, which it was within probably about 2 months, certainly by the April 2022, when the April 2022 peace talks fell apart, yes, by that point, it should have just been mass mobilization, push 2 million guys in and just do the thing, you know? But it didn't happen, and it's been a slow build-up on both sides. And now, finally, 18-ish months later, the Ukrainians are in a position of not being able to match. The latest report I saw, again, you could take these figures, grain of salt or whatever, is 1-4. Is the Ukrainians are currently mobilizing one recruit for every 4 casualties who can no longer continue fighting, whether that's wounded or killed in action. So, as they call them, what is it? Sanitary losses. You can continue to fight. Unsanitary losses, or you're either killed or you're wounded to the point where you can't continue to fight. So the backdrop for all of this, the backdrop for the Belgorod operation is not even so much the Russian elections, as we discussed, but the critical situation, which there are increasing, the kind of peripheral Zog media and press has actually been pretty, has been sounding pretty loud alarms. There was a Polish general who was interviewed just a few days ago, who's basically let on that as bad as recent headlines have been in places like the Washington Post and the New York Times, they're actually underselling it. The Polish general actually said that he said there are millions of people missing, which is true because when you factor in people who fled and so on, but that he suspects a true number of casualties is over a million. It's in the millions.
I think he was. I read that same article. And it seemed like it may have been a translation thing.
Well, he said two things. I think
he said, like, people gone, yes. Right, was, like, the phrase he used, which means, like, refugee, men who have emigrated, which makes sense why a Russian or a Ukrainian higher-up guy would say, like, consider men who have fled the country and won't come back. He considers those, like, just as good as killed.
Right.
Like, I think he's loading in guys who fled with, like, actual...
That's certainly true, but there was a second quote later on that could be a translation issue, but it seemed like... I think there was a translation issue with regard to that first quote, people misinterpreting that as millions of casualties, which, in other words, 2 million or more, which it's very unlikely. But if you think that there's about a, with the deteriorating battlefield medicine situation, 1-1 is not, and then the increased use of these increasingly powerful glide bombs. I don't think 1-1 overall is necessarily unrealistic. And if we accept about 400,000 to 500,000 KIA and another 400,000 to 500,000 WIA, that's a million, right? And that's not an implausible figure at this point. Could be high, probably is high. How high? I don't know, but like I think we're certainly on the order of a million unsanitary losses for Ukraine at this point. That's the right order of magnitude. Closer to 7 figures than 6, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to find. Did you see this? Was it Economist trying to pull this article up where they did a really bad medical meta analysis or whatever they call it? They used some big word for it, but they were arguing that like. Russia is outshooting their artillery barrel production. Have you seen this?
Yes, I did see that. I mean, Russia can't rebore a barrel every week or something. It was
well, they like... were they were making the argument that like Russians' current rate would consume like equivalent 10 barrels or 20 barrels per week, whatever. But they were arguing that they weren't even using pre-war production figures. They were using 1990s production figures. It's like saying, well, during the Great Depression, the United States Army like purchased like no Tommy guns.
Right. Therefore, they will not have automatic weapons. Yeah, it's just, well, the whole thing is just, I mean, that's the level of copium that I don't think, it's funny to point and
there's
laugh.
There was one that was a little more sophisticated than the New York Times that was sent to me that was, there's like this guy who's interviewed by the New York Times who says his job is to like recover bodies to be buried like humanely. And he's a Ukrainian figure associated with the Ukrainian armed forces somehow. And he was saying for every 80 Russian bodies he finds to like humanely bury, he finds like 5 to 6 Ukrainians. And he's like operating in the west of Avdiivka right now. And it's just like,
yeah, I don't believe you.
It just seems kind of weird that like, you know, like also like that was one of the things that like just tipped me off in the article. Like, people don't talk in ratios that way. You would take 15 to 1. You wouldn't say 5 to 80. It's not like I don't speak Russian, so maybe that's how Russians do ratios like more exactly. But in English, you say like 15 to 1. You don't say like 5 to 80 ratio. It's kind of weird.
Well, that's also just a fit. I mean, if we're trying to draw any kind of conclusion, I mean, I suppose it's possible that in one particular area of west of Avdiivka,
also there were no pictures.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just, of course not. But yeah, I mean, I was just saying, I have no trouble imagining there are 80 red dead Russians in a field somewhere west of Avdiivka. That, I can believe that. And maybe he came across a group of 5 Ukrainians in that same field. Okay. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, like, this doesn't, like, so what?
Yeah.
Even if that's true, which clearly it isn't, but even if it were.
I just think, like, the idea of we're finding, like, hidden Russian mass graves, or piles of Russian bodies. Like, no. Like, you would have pictures. Like, I refuse to believe the Ukrainians are not taking pictures. Like, for both sides. Like, when the Russians claim they're getting, like, what if the Russians claim a mass surrender? They have pictures of it.
This is the first social media war.
The Russians claimed mass surrenders in Avdiivka, and they weren't there.
If you don't have pics, they were no pictures. If you don't have pics, it didn't happen. Like, for real, though.
Yeah. Yeah, like, if you, I'm sorry, like, for things like mass graves and mass surrenders, those things are eminently easy to photograph. Like, the mass grave isn't going anywhere. Like, you could photograph it. Like, same thing with your mass surrender. Like, those guys are like being processed into your rear. Like, they whip out a
phone. And while we're rounding things out, there was a recent video of one of the bigger, larger surrenders, a whole unit of something like 18 guys and the remnants of a company, something like that, who surrendered en masse, and the company commander in the video specifically noted that they were not, it seems, reading between the lines, it seems they were presented with some kind of option whether they wanted to be put up for prisoner exchange or not. And he said, we are not volunteering for prisoner exchange because we don't want to go back to Ukraine, because when people go back to Ukraine, bad things happen. So, I mean,
well, they just get pushed back to another. Well, I think they just get sent back.
They just get right back in the front. Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah. So, like, what? Yeah. So, but which just goes to show. I mean, it shows you several things, but you know, none of them good for Ukraine. Which, I mean, to me, the overall theme here is collapse.
But it does remind me, before we last thing in the collapse thing, which I still think is further off, is that I don't know if I mentioned last episode, or Ukraine episode. If you're doing like analyst time, I want to be my own analyst. I don't want to just listen to the guys at Nigger. One good analyst tip is, if you're seeing the claim of a Ukrainian unit size, just knock it down by 1. Mm. So if you see a Ukrainian division, it's a brigade. You see a Ukrainian brigade, it's a battalion. Battalion's a company. Company's a platoon. And then a squad is a squad, right? Those just are why the same. But like, you are the manpower in these individual units is very low.
Well, units are essentially operating
exception,
at, sorry, go on.
10%. 10 to 25%.
I was going to say 30, but yeah, I mean, same idea.
It's like, low.
It's very low. The paper strength unit size is about 3 to 4 times, if not more.
Possible exception of whatever that unit they sent up into Belgrade, which was that seemed like a brigade size.
That was
brigade,
a proper heavy brigade, yeah.
And then was quickly unbrigaded, it seems. Also, did they say which brigade that was? I'm sure at some point they did.
I don't know. Yeah, I would have to look, and it's kind of already a moot point because they just got BTFO'd.
Yeah.
People were saying, I don't know, it's hard. I didn't really see so many pictures, and you should take that rule for both sides, so who knows. But the descriptions were apocalyptic of the situation of the – and given – the speed at which, yes, probably the better part of 1,000 dudes was just quickly demolished. Like, yeah, you can imagine just how bloody that situation was.
That also produced that really high quality video. It was like 4K of them just getting fabbed over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fab thing,
like a scrapyard.
And they're talking now because they had the Fab 500 and the Fab 1000. Now they're rolling out Fab 3000, which is three fucking metric tons. And then did I hallucinate, or is there a 9 ton? I think they're working also. Because the 3 ton fabs are starting to be rolled off the assembly line. If I didn't hallucinate it, they are like at least design phase for 9 ton fabs, Fab 9000. And even if I did, okay, let's say I hallucinated that, that's not real. Still, 3 tons of high explosive just raining on your shit is, I mean.
Yeah. You get to, and I don't want, we're kind of getting too late in the episode, but you get to diminishing returns though with like.
Sure. Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Like you actually want smaller stuff.
And it's also, they can travel farther the smaller they are, right? They
if you're longer. Bunker busting, if your bomb is too fat, it doesn't dig into the bunker.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ideal bunker buster is like, frankly, what the U.S. made, which is like an artillery tube packed with explosives, so it like hits the ground and burrows. The fab is just this big fat kind of like thing. Actually, won't like, it's not going to burrow.
Still a surface level.
Yeah,
yeah, sure, but still, I mean, just the compression wave from these things is monstrous. I mean, you see,
people who survive. More speculation. Apparently, there's alleging that some of the attackers escaped in Russia.
Oh man. Well. Oh, they say, yeah, after more than, it's become clear the attackers managed to escape. Oh, God. Well.
Or if that's true, who the fuck knows? Like, people are saying that to create issues, or they heard that. Like, yeah, I don't want to speculate. I just know that whoever the Russians want it to be, that's who it was at a certain point.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's going to be the facts on the ground, as they say. I think this is just, to me, I think we can close with saying this is a very clear inflection point. Just this past week really has, and even just these past 24 hours things are not going to be the same moving forward. It's hard to say what, at a certain point, you can never step in the same river twice and things are never the same, but still this is, I don't know. Do you agree? Do you disagree? What do you?
Well, no, you can't, of course you can't say it the same river twice.
Right, but as far as this being an inflection point.
I think the election, I think it's more of a, it depends. Like, this is a handing of the initiative to Russia. They can choose, they can choose to make an inflection point they want. They could also just keep doing the current thing they're doing. Like, I don't think, you know what I'm saying? Like, I see.
Well, the reason why I say yes, and I totally get
fully in their court.
But here's what I'm saying is, and I don't think we disagree, but
you're predicting the next. You're predicting 20 of the last 10 Russian offensives, like.
So other sort of breaking news in this, last 24 hours is the Russians have captured high ground north of Ivanivka, which is one of the there's Soledar and then Bakhmut has northern and southern suburbs, I guess you could call them, that are, key strategic points. This was, Russia had to take them in order to take Bakhmut. Then they took Bakhmut. Then they got pushed out of these key suburbs. Now they're pushing back into them. And the southern of these suburbs, Klisheyevka, is essentially it's a kilometer and a half, the Russians are now from Chasiv Yar, which is next Bakhmut, right? I just have to assume it's next Bakhmut. So the overall situation as I see it is essentially, it's true. Like, I think you're right that Russia could, if they elect to just keep doing what they're doing, and that probably isn't a bad idea. The thing is that the Ukrainian manpower and ammunition situation is so bad. We haven't even talked about it. It's so funny. It's just so much shit happening. The Congress, I think I said this last time on the air, on the episode, or maybe not, I don't remember, but maybe it was off air, but we're now in that late March time frame where the previous tranches of military aid to Ukraine are running out, and Ukraine is transitioning to their own strategic reserves and stockpiles, which are not that big and may last them through June at current late rates of consumption.
I have one final thought.
Yeah,
because I think is interesting thought, guys. That the viewer kind of, I'm not gonna imply anything to them, to the viewer. I want them to take this one home with you. I'm looking at this band Picnic. They seem kind of analogous to like the B-52s. Like, if the B-52s concert was attacked, like,
oh,
in
man.
America.
Imagine how mad the boomers would be.
Yeah, but like, how much would you care? Or
oh,
like,
not
what would
all.
Your reaction?
Yeah, I would just blame this.
I mean, I wouldn't be happy, like, especially old white people, but like, I would just be like mad at CIA again. Like,
I
don't think a B-52s concert being attacked in this fanfare, although horrifying, would not be like time to like invade who is responsible. My first thought would be like, we better not invade nobody. My first thought, like, I don't care who did this. Like,
yeah,
I don't. Yeah,
I don't want this to. Yeah.
How are you programmed? Tell us in the comments. How have you been programmed to respond to this kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a good. I don't know. I'm curious. It's the political, like, how, and that's one of the big questions here is how is the Russian public going to respond? But yeah, to finish what I was saying before, I just. Like I think there's a real danger of, okay, probably. I mean, there's a lot of ground, just physical land, between the Russian army and Kiev, and a wide front, but they are really having critical problems with both manpower and ammunition. These are, and air defense as well, not just artillery shells, and I've heard even rifle rounds are a problem. But air defense is, well, who knows? I mean, I just saw complaints from Ukrainian soldiers about I only get 5 bullets or something. So like the New York Times, right? But with the air defense being depleted, with the manpower shortages, with the political sensitivity, with the fact that they're now officially in extra legal territory. You know, there's an like the government doesn't have any legal status under the Ukrainian constitution because Zelensky's term is passed when it should legally it's expired essentially. So again, I'm certainly not predicting like just a totally rapid collapse. I'm saying if Russia continues what they're doing and without necessarily directly escalating, it could still have a pretty dramatic result, and unless who is it, Mike Johnson, the hardcore rock rib Republican replacement for Kevin McCarthy, who the conservatives are extremely the edgy cons and sort of right wing of the Republican caucus is furious at with today because he has allowed through some kind of spending bill without border provisions. So,
who could have seen this one coming? Right? Ah, the Republicans have been once again owned.
So not only has Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced a motion to remove him as speaker, one of the
let's fucking do it, dude. That's awesome, actually. I'm so happy.
The 15th district in Wisconsin is represent. I think it's the 15th. Is one of the districts. It's a R plus, like double digits, district in Wisconsin. Dude announced his resignation like the day before a law would have kicked in, where it would have essentially made it would have forced snap elections to have a Republican in the seat, so that they could continue to vote with the day after. So because he's resigning now, or he's resigning on a day in April, which means that Republican seat will be vacant until the elections in November. Republicans are already operating on like a one seat or two seat. What is it? They had 3 seats with George Santos. Then George Santos got removed. And now this guy is removing himself. So Republicans now have a single seat majority, if that, in the House, and instability at the top of the leadership. And he says he's going to take up. I would love to see. I would love to see, because he's talking about taking up Ukraine aid in April when the House reconvenes. Yeah, grab your popcorn, because we could see another speaker fight. It's an interesting question. It's an open question. How much
I like speaker fights, not because they're real, but because no more aid can go to anybody.
Exactly, it just gums up the works. 100% agreed. Yeah, it's not that it matters. It's just it's obviously kayfabe. The thing is, what's not kayfabe is Ukraine is while this happens, Ukraine isn't getting shit, and it's egregious enough, and the situation is egregious enough, and that Republicans in the Senate are making noises about this isn't what we agreed to, and blah 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 blah. So so it could fall to a filibuster in the Senate as well, right? Because if the Republican, if the optics mind of Republicans who want to stay, who correctly intuit that their continued political relevance rests on being reelected under terms as like a, I'm not going to send money to Ukraine unless we get money for the border, which is okay in a sane world. I mean, that's like nothing wrong with that as policy, but the point is like.
I'm surprised they don't just give them the border money. Because border money is meaningless.
It's a meaningless term.
Money for the border means money they just give to Brown. Like they just that's
it would
like
be
they
so give, easy. Yeah.
All they do with the border money is they preload on like Visa cards and hand it to illegal immigrants. It's a meme. I think a boomer, but like they just give that money to the fucking people. Like that means it's for plane flights and hotels and just like given to fucking Pajits like and boomer and. Chinese, not boomers, and Jinx, and anyone who steps across the border, they just get handed the border money. The border money as a thing doesn't, it's not even real. Like, what do you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Right. It would be the easiest thing in the world to just give the.
Name your border money price.
Yeah.
They'll take it.
Just like, give them enough to shut them up to get the fucking Ukraine aid through, which they want to give anyway. These people are not, like, Putin stands or whatever. You know, they're cowards who
they need
and
like
idiots.
One win to go into the re-election.
Yeah.
Like they need oh well, you know, I did the border, like I gave the border $6 million more, $6 billion whatever. Like they want like one border thing. Like they want a small victory and like they're just not getting it.
They're just not getting it. And so yeah, so we'll see what happens in April, but in the meantime, you know, keep your eyes for sure on Chasov Yar, because that is looking to be next Bakhmut. And you know, I just enjoy consuming Bakhmut and getting excited for next Bakhmut. It's just a, you know, I'm a Bakhmut enjoyer, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, with that, I guess that wraps up our emergency nigger. Yeah. We are still – we have stuff in the pipeline and – oh, yeah, housekeeping stuff. Real quick. So the RSS, the old RSS should still be working, should still work indefinitely. However, you will have better results if you subscribe to our Substack RSS and our Substack generally. From now on, I'm going to be treating Substack as the primary platform. And I don't know that I necessarily need to take the Spotify down. No, I'm not sure if we're syndicated through there on like Apple. I have to double check our because you can also syndicate. I can also syndicate through Substack on various podcast servers. But if the syndication still works, then it's like whatever. But yeah, just a heads up. And the same thing will be true for Right Wing Dharma Squads. I'm finally gearing up for like people who are subscribed might, or you might want to check it out. But yes, Right Wing Dharma Squads.substack.com now has our entire back catalog up on the site, and I will be moving forward. The RSS for Right Wing Dharma Squads will be through Substack, and it will be published on Substack, and we'll be moving to Substack. So keep an eye for that. Did you have anything else? Were there any last moment of Sven?
No, keep circling the tapes or whatever. I don't know.
All right. Stay safe. Stay cozy, everybody. Take care. Just out of waves.
what you